What's going on, beautiful people of the Retro Recall Podcast? Joined here today with my buddy Rain Bean. He's going to hang in here and drop some knowledge on us a little bit, give you a bit behind the scenes. I'm sure a few of you listening in have listened to him over the years, watched him on YouTube. He has a great channel. If you've never heard of him before, go check him out. He's all about selling, buying, trading, flipping, all sorts of retro game topics. You name it, he's done it. He's got some fun series like Bootleg Central, where he goes through what's the cheapest, worst bootlegs he can run through. He's even got a couple pretty cool cartoons he's put together over the years. They always crack me up. So why don't we start off with Rain Bean? He's going to be kind of the focus of this. Also got Rom here today. Rain Bean, why don't you tell me a little bit about how you got into retro gaming? I know you've been doing this a while, because I've known you for, I feel like, at least probably like around 6 years, and you were doing retro gaming and had a whole room full of games at that point.
Yeah, about 6 years ago, I think, is when I started YouTube. But a few years before that, you know, a lot like everybody else, you'd watch YouTubers like AVGN, you know. There wasn't many out. And AVGN, he really related to me, because I'd watch him and I'd be like, man, I remember that game. You know, it wasn't that terrible. And I'd see him, you know, in his background, I'd see all these games on his shelf. And I didn't grow up with a lot of money, so something like that was just, you know, shocking to see. I never seen anybody with a game collection. And at that time, you know, in my adult life, I think every adult at some point gets to a degree where they have money to play with. They have play money. And I don't have kids or anything. So I was like, you know what? I want to play something I, you know, used to play back in the day. Get an N64 or something. And, you know, I'd look up, you know, like on eBay, which was, you know, it wasn't primitive back then, but it wasn't, you know, well-trusted. You know, even still today, it doesn't seem well-trusted. For whatever reason. And I'd be like, man, that's kind of pricey. And then I'd look at YouTube, and there was a few, very few people that would sell or go out looking for video games. They're like Maximus Black or CJR. And I was like, okay, I'll try that. And I got started getting right back into retro gaming, and it was such a thrill to be able to find not just one, but a couple games that you had as a kid. And, you know, like I said, growing up poor, you know, we were lucky to get, you know, a couple games at a time. They were all rentals for the most part. And so now I get to play whatever I want. Nothing can really stop me. You know, I don't have, you know, like I said, I don't have kids. And even if I did, they'd be playing right beside me, as I'm sure y'all's will. So it's fun to get back into it. Definitely scratches that nostalgic itch that I think a lot of people get into retro gaming do it for. And it sinks its claws into you. It's something that's, once you get your first successful pickup or first successful find, it's over at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of that, I mean, do you have any favorite consoles or memories from over the years doing the collecting?
Since I've been collecting, or since, you know, I've been playing games? Because it's
either way.
I'd say my favorite memory was the first time I ever played Zelda. And the first Zelda game I ever played, and it's going to sound, you're going to be like, man, I can't believe that. It was Ocarina of Time. I played it on a 19-inch TV. It was my brother's. I had two older brothers, so I was always that kid that got the broken controller, or like the aftermarket joystick so long, my thumb ain't even got enough length to reach it kind of thing, you know? So I was lucky to play games if we got them. But they were gone for the for the week or so, and I snuck in their bedroom, and they had Ocarina of Time in there. A little 19-inch TV. I mean, this thing's small. So I'm sitting up close to it. And I'm like, man, Link, he's young like me. He was very relatable at that age. And first time playing, and it was magnificent. I played it all the way through. Very proud of myself, you know, getting past things like the water temple, which everybody says is so hard. It's not. It just takes patience. I can remember, you know, figuring out that I had to, you know, roll crouch underneath Ganon and then strike him in, you know, in the back. I thought that was, you know, amazing. And that was like the first real connection with gaming that I had, because like I said, growing up with brothers, we played a lot of fighting games, or we did a lot of fighting one, and me being the youngest boy, I got the whoopings most of the time.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear you say that it was Ocarina of Time was your first Zelda experience. Anybody that watches your channel, I'm sure, has seen your Zelda shrine and your love for the series. So
that was the series, like, you know, with it being like my first real game of getting into it, latched onto me. Extremely relatable. And then after that, you know, I was like, well, we got a Super Nintendo, and I think we got a copy of, you know, Zelda, like Link to the Past, and I play it, and it's completely different. You know, it's, you know, top view kind of thing. But the story and everything about it, the style of it, it was just, next thing you know, I've played and owned every Zelda game. So that's, you know, that's a, everybody's got, it's cliche. It's like liking Nirvana. Everybody likes Nirvana. Well, you know why? Because it's a good damn band. You know, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, absolutely. So somewhere along the line, you're known for reselling and flips and showing people how to pick up games in the wild. I know you do a lot more than just that. But how'd you get started into reselling? It seems like your gaming started first and then reselling came later. Is that correct?
It started, you know, I talked to you earlier, you know, I was talking to Weeble from the Discord server, and he's a young kid. And he told me how he got started. It's the same way I got started. And I think a lot of people get started this way. You get back into retro collecting. You get back into the hobby. So you're going to yard sales or thrift stores, and you pick up stuff. You pick up a lot. Let's say your first lot ever you pick up is an N64 lot. Most likely it's going to have Mario 64, maybe a Mario Kart, Madden 99, because of course it's got to be there. And then, you know, a week goes by and you pick up another N64 lot, but it's already got those games. So you end up with doubles. And then, you know, what do you do with all these doubles? They start to accumulate the more you get into collecting. So you got the whole shelf full of stuff you already got. So you start to sell it off. And then you realize how quick and easy it is to post a game and have it sell and then have that money sent right to your wallet. You know, you start to think like, you know, this N64 lot cost me $50, but I just sold these two doubles that I got from it and made $60. I just made $10, and I didn't even have to pay for these games to add to my collection. It is not fictitious to build a game room of 5,000 games, 40 consoles for free. It's very doable, very easy. It's going to take time. It's going to take patience, but it won't cost you a dime if you do it right.
And a lot of people do that, I know, and that kind of segues into our next topic here. And part of the highlight today is definitely going to be asking you and sharing some tips from over the years on reselling. If you want to get into game collecting, what are some of the good avenues that you've gone through? And we'll start off kind of with a little bit of a round table for each of us. But what are your thoughts about like reselling games? And there, I know there's some stigmas in the community about reselling. What are your thoughts around it?
Reselling games is 100%. I feel appropriate, needed. You know, without reselling of games, there would be no market value. No one would have, there would be no grounds for pricing of a game. There would be no grounds of rarity. No one would know about these games for a cent, you know, that there would be no platform to get these games. You know, they would just be gone, you know, without eBay, without, you know, Facebook groups, without collectors, without people who buy and sell games, they would virtually just go extinct. All we would have is new gen consoles and everything else old would be gone. No, you're not going to live in a world that strictly relies on trading, because there would be no possibility of that, because without the value of a game, there's no trade. And to get that value of the trade, you have to sell it. I feel it's 100% necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rom, what are your thoughts around it and the stigma there? Do you resell at all?
I think I share pretty much Rinbean's view on it. I mean, you kind of have to have it. And to me, the stigma, I think, mostly is there's some people, the way they act, they're super obnoxious, or they don't treat people with respect when they're reselling. And I think that is what kind of brings the stigma. I think there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And most of the people that I've dealt with, I mean, I met you guys on Rinbean's server, and I'm on another Discord as well. Like, those kind of people kind of taught me how to do it so that you're not looked down upon, and how to interact with people. Like Rinbean said, it's 100% necessary. I think if there weren't a collecting aspect of it, then all of our consoles would be 100% digital, and there would be no physical games. I mean, you guys remember whenever the Xbox One came out, they're like, yeah, we're ditching the disc drive, man. The amount of people that went up in arms about that. I mean, I think resellers and people who buy secondhand stuff is what's keeping this portion alive, that allows us to have these shelves behind us full of games. You know what I mean? So definitely necessary, and definitely a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of share the same sentiments with both of you. I've done reselling over the years quite extensively. I have quite the collection these days, and a lot of that is attributed to years of hard work, spending time on the weekends, you know, whether you're hunting through digital ads or if you go out and try yard sales or flea markets. For me, I did a lot of it off of Facebook Marketplace and Craigslist and stuff before it was really dead. If I didn't do it, I wouldn't have what I have. Now, I always treated people with respect when I went out there as a reseller. And I think part of the problem that people run into is they don't like when somebody buys a $500 game for $5. Like, man, that's they call them scumbag resellers. And there are some people out there that do some shady things. But I think that's where a lot of that stigma comes around. Like, sometimes I think people are jealous of the fact that you're getting after it. You're getting a collection built and they wish they had the same thing. But I see nothing wrong. Like, reselling is a healthy part of being a collector. And if you don't do it, you won't build a collection without going into tons of expenses. And I've seen a lot of people in debt, which you should not do as a collector. And then they drop out. They sell everything at half the price they paid for it. You know, a year or two down the line, they get burnt out. A lot of us have kind of done this over years. And, you know, there's definitely a lot of good ways to do things and bad ways. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Before we get fully into that topic, I'm sure people are curious, Rain Bean. What kind of got you into going into YouTube? Because you've highlighted, you know, buying, selling, trading. You know, you got into it as a collector and moved into it, but then somehow you decided to go YouTube.
So you've known me over the years, and you've seen a lot of my videos. A lot of people know me for, I guess, not necessarily having a filter. Like, I'll tell you kind of how I feel. You know, I'll tell you about it. What got me into YouTube initially was I was kind of pissed off at what was available on YouTube. Because, again, you know, I'd watch people like Maximus Black or CJR, and great channels. You know, CJR had a fantastic collection. I loved his collection. And you know, I'd watch like Matt. That was really about the only two that I'd watch. Now, there was another one, Craigslist Game Finds. And what irritated the hell out of me. But what irritated me the most is I'd watch them, you know, they would do, you know, live footage. It was real raw interaction for the most part, except they had using like their phones or something. So it wasn't extremely raw, but they would pick up a game, you know, they'd come to a table and they'd be like, oh yeah, you know, here's Sonic 2, you know, here's Heavy Nova. This is a good one to have. But they would never tell you why. And then come to find out, you know, maybe that game is worth money or, you know, that game's more sought after, and they wouldn't teach you anything about it. And I would see not the most pleasant interactions when it came to how they dealt with people. I'm, you know, living in the South, you know, growing up in Charleston, South Carolina, there's a lot of Southern hospitality that was put into me and how I act towards people. I'm very respectful towards people. You can see that when I'm doing my dealings. And I would see people, you know, on the few videos that I watch, and it would be very rude. They'd be throwing stuff around on the tables like, that's not yours to throw around. But the biggest thing is they wouldn't educate people on why are you looking for that? Why do you want to keep an eye out for Wii Sports? And at the time I was like, you know what? You know, I had that what's that little redheaded girl, Shirley Temple, that anything you could do, I can do better syndrome. So I was all like, you know what? I'm going to do it, but I want it to be raw. I don't want a fake interaction. Cause if you go up to somebody with a phone in your hand or, you know, a camera strapped to, you know, your titties, they're not going to act right. They are going to act like, you know what, I got to act different. This is, they're either going to be irritated or they're going to act fake. So I started shopping for online glasses or spy glasses. Man, I went through like three or four just terrible quality, didn't do anything right, you know, didn't work well. And then I finally found a pair. It was pricey at the time, but they worked. They made me look stupid. I didn't mind that because the interactions that I had on camera were 100% real because people didn't know they were being filmed. And that's what I liked about it. And then I would teach people, you know, this is why you want this. This is what you want to keep an eye on. Always pick up controllers. If you see this cord, go for that cord. This game's going to sell for this. And, you know, I was very, very verbal about it. So I guess I got started just because I was pissed off. But it blossomed into a whole thing. And I'm grateful for everything that I've been through with it. It's had its ups and downs. Been called every name under the sun. But I've seen so much, you know, gratitude and hospitality, and even coming back to YouTube now, it's been warming. very welcoming.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that always stood out about your videos. People always kind of grasped your personality and the way you treated people, and they just enjoy listening to you and hearing you talk about these things.
They like my dumb accent. What it is. I once commented that I wanted to Johnny Cage a lady in the ovaries. I remember that one time because she was such a B word at this yard sale, and I was so angry. God almighty.
Yeah. You get good and bad interactions with people, right? It's only human to feel that way.
Well, I think whenever I went from doing, early on, I was doing a lot of narration over it because I didn't know a good formula. And then people were all like, we want to hear you haggle. We want to hear you talk. And I was like, that's going to save me a lot of time editing. Let's try that. And I tried it, and it was a success. So, and then everybody was all like, man, we love the way you talk, how you haggle, how you interact with people. And I like to have fun with it. I mean, if you're not having fun, yard selling, if you don't get anything, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I know I've picked up a few things over the years. And you even did one video on, it was refurbishing a NES. And I still hear people talk about that video. That's got to be one of your top played videos, I got to imagine.
Believe it or not, it's not. I had a video well over a couple million views that I actually deleted. And it was before I was going to do anything retro and all this. I started a YouTube account since the beginning, 14, 15 years ago. And I was going to do music and then do this and all that. And then when I started doing retro stuff and it started picking up, I was like, hey, let's get rid of that because that does not tie into this channel. But no, that NES video, it did do really well. And, because I go through it step by step. The only thing I wish I could change is back then I was more lenient when it came to taking very fine grit sandpaper to some pens. And, now doing what I do now, I'd be like, yeah, don't do that. At least use some Bright Boy or something. But back then I still get comments on that video. You shouldn't sand the pens. I know. But, if you read some of those comments, they're very heartwarming. I'd see a comment like, my father passed away and I pulled his old Nintendo out of the closet and it hasn't worked in years. And watching this video, I'm playing games we used to play as a kid, stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, my heart can only handle so much. I love stuff like that.
So what was the video that had a couple million views that you took down? What
kind of
video was it?
So
that's what I want to know.
at the time, I was experimenting with, it was popular at the time, just playing video games, playing, what am I trying to think of? Streaming, I guess, but I'm not streaming. I'm just uploading videos. I was playing GTA 5 and it happened to be in a strip club. And so... I guess the it being provocative with me talking, I was very profane in it. Oh yeah, it's wild. A couple million views. I think I probably gained 20 subs from that video. You would be completely surprised on how that works when it comes to YouTube. They can watch it, they can laugh. Is it something they want to come back to? No.
It's probably one of those things that went viral. Look at this video. You watch it once and then move on. It's
probably just a bunch of kids who wanted to see some animated panties on screen. That's all it is.
So some of your segments over the years, I know you've done a number of different things, but the cartoons, man, I still die laughing with that guy you drew with the, let me pull out all my games. I got Madden, Madden 25, Madden edition of Madden and whatever it was.
And there's the last one was Can't You Believe It's Not Can't You Believe It's Not Madden, but it actually is, something like that. Believe it or not, I've done a handful of cartoons. They are my favorite thing of all the things I've ever done on YouTube. Those are what I am most proud of because I made those entirely for me. They weren't for an audience. They weren't for anybody. They were for me to laugh at, for me to just to watch every now and then and just cut up. My Skyrim cartoon, I cannot. To this day, I can't watch it with a straight face. It's hilarious to me. Absolutely. And that's the hardest thing about making them is because I can't make them for people who like them. I got to make them for me. That's the only way that they work.
Yeah, I love those things. I don't know how they do view count wise, but if you make more, I'll be a happy man.
Yeah. And there's a lot to say about doing stuff for yourself. There's so many videos out there, even in this community, you're just like, all right, you're just doing this definitely for... You want more clicks and things like that. So keep going, man. That's awesome. I need to go back and look at the animated stuff.
I recommend the Skyrim one and the yard selling one's good too. I told Steve of one coming up for the marketplace. I like that'll be a good one. But man, they take time. They do take some time to make. But there's a rule, like each picture can only take less than 1 minute to draw. And then they look so stupid. God almighty, they look horrible.
I remember one time I sent Reen being a package and I printed out a snippet of the guy, I think with the Madden in his hand, and I sent him this thing, and I remember you told me you were like dying laughing.
Oh yeah. Like, it kills me. Like, I can sit here next to somebody and watch the same cartoon. They don't get it at all. But for me, I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's hilarious.
You printed it out on like one of those thermal labels and you sent me a package one time with it back too. I was laughing. I still have that. I put that actually in my game room.
On this very computer right here that Rom helped me get back and going is a file that contains thousands, I'm sure, of still images from my cartoons, all made in glorious Microsoft Paint.
that's awesome. Bootleg Central is definitely one of the ones. It cracks me up when you do those because you find like the cheesiest, worst piece of junk ripoff consoles that are out there, and just your demeanor and the way you present them just it has me dying. How did you get into Bootleg Central? What gave you the idea for that?
I think this happened a lot around like the Wii's. Like, well, no, I'd say. When you're out yard selling, garage selling, you come across a lot of Wii peripherals. This is stupid as stuff, you know? It'd be like here's a baby carriage you can put your Wiimote in and act like you're rocking your baby or something, you know? And then you'd come across a bunch of Wii knockoffs, and I'd pick them up. This house, I'd be like, this thing just looks absolutely stupid. It would have, like, a picture of, like, Lara Croft on it or something, you know, like, holding, like, machine gun, shooting, like, you know, like, Link from Zelda. And I'm like, the hell is going on? And so I'd pick it up, and, you know, I'd try them out. I'd be like, and I'm very honest. I'd be like, you know, if it was good, I'd say, yeah, this is pretty cool. They never were. And I started to feel bad because I know the way they marketed them, you know, there'd be, like, some helpless grandma who got this for their son because, you know, they didn't know no better. So I was like, well, let's just, you know, do an honest review of one of these things. And then, you know, it happens with a lot of people with YouTube. You'll on Instagram, you'll get some Chinese company or some overseas company. They'll reach out to you and they'll say, hey, we want to send you this product for you to do a review. And I'm like, okay, I'm sure you aren't familiar with the series. And they would always send me something. And it was never positive. And I think there was one thing that was positive because it actually was pretty cool. But still, I was honest with it. So now, you know, what's interesting is how the whole demographic has changed. I'll be sitting there looking on the TikTok, and they're selling these bootleg consoles, but these kids are advertising them as something good. And I'm like, I reviewed the same thing. It's horrible, you know? You know, they're selling them for $6, $7. But it's funny to watch someone with a fake perspective of it. But now the bootleg was another fun thing that I like doing. But, man, it's torture at times. I got a closet full of bootlegs.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you do. I know I've sent you a couple.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure if you reviewed or did those bootleg centrals and you took little snippets of the funny moments of the terrible things, those would probably go viral on like some of the shorts or on TikTok or something.
I gotta get into the shorts thing. I'm it's still something somewhat new to me. YouTube has changed a lot as far as like what I'm used to and how, you know, doing all the videos again. So I'm coming back into it. I'm starting to get better with it. But yeah, I do like the idea of the shorts. So those are quick and easy and just got to do more of them.
So I guess moving on a little bit, still talking about YouTube, but if anybody wanted to start out on YouTube, you've been doing this a little while. You took a break for a little bit, jump back into it. Any tips you'd have for somebody just getting started out with retro games and YouTube?
It'll sound cliche again, but try to be original. Like at least, you know, when I started, I'm not the first person to ever record a yard sale. Or do any of that, but I was one of the few to actually like talk about things and teach people, you know, and like do it my own way. Now, you know, you can go on YouTube and you can see, you know, hundreds of people going to yard sales. It seems like everybody's doing it now. They may not have the personality, they might not go anywhere with it, but it does seem to be like a lot of people are doing that now. But if you can find a way to twist it around, be different with it, by all means. I've seen a few new YouTubers that I'm like, that's cool. I like the way you're doing it. It's completely different, but it's the same idea. But the biggest advice I give to people is because so many people assume they're going to start up something like a YouTube channel. Go stand in front of a mirror for 10 minutes and talk to yourself like you're going to talk to an audience. And you're going to realize how dumb you sound. For me, I know I sound like an idiot, but I accept that. When you feel you don't sound like an idiot and you try to manipulate the way you sound or come off as somebody you aren't, it's just not going to work. People can see right through a fictitious person. That's the way I look at it. I can see people, like, I know you're putting a face on, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think being genuine is important on any type of media. People want real people there. If they want fake people, I mean, sure, there's stuff out there, reality TV and all that. But oh, yeah. That's even probably harder to pull off and do it right. Heading kind of down the reselling track a little bit, maybe we'll talk a little bit about that topic. And one of the questions I know a lot of people, especially those just starting out, is always asking, what's the best place to look for retro games in the wild? Where would you recommend people start out at?
I would say if this was 6 years ago, yard sales, garage sales, flea markets. Now, no. I have 90% of my luck. I'd go as far as 95% of my luck comes from my ads. I'd say maybe it could depend on where you're at, you know, how saturated is your town. I live in Asheville, so it's very populated here. So, you know, the more population you have, which is good, but it also means the more competition you're going to have. So you're going to have more people at those yard sales, more people at the garage sales. And with this surge of people, you know, on YouTube now, there's so many people going to yard sales and so many people are trying to get into it. It makes it even harder. So you got to stay one step above that. So for me, if you were starting out, not only are you going to, you know, if you're not looking to just really get crazy hits, you know, Facebook Marketplace isn't a terrible option. You can find, you know, a decent bundle. It may not be, you know, like yard sale prices or anything like that, but you know, you can find decent bundles and start out like that. But when you get in and start placing ads and like really crunching down, even on Craigslist, you deal with a lot of flack, but you come out very nicely if you're persistent with it.
Yeah. And I've heard that, and I know you've mentioned before you put those ads out, and there's a lot of people that have questions, I'm sure, around putting out Facebook ads. There's been some issues I've seen people ask about where they put an ad out and then they either get flagged or the post gets taken down. Do you have any tips around like the best way to put those out there?
Yeah. Do not post on Marketplace. Posting anything ISO on Marketplace is an automatic flag by their robots. It's not people are flagging them like that. It's just automatically taken down. You do it three or four times and Facebook will ban you from using Marketplace. So do not post. What I tell people, because they automatically assume I'm posting to Marketplace, but I'm not. What I do is I will go to my Facebook search bar and I will type in buy, sell, trade or yard sale or local, you know, swap and shop. And you'll see a bunch of, you know, local like Asheville online yard sale or. And you join all these groups. You can, you know, I join maybe 50 to 100. And when you join all these groups, after that, you just go to one group and then it'll say, what are you selling? And then now you're making a listing. So instead of selling all caps, I buy old video games. I put a placeholder picture in there of a bunch of retro games, put a placeholder price of 1, 2, 3. And then the description, I say, you know, hey, I buy old video games. I give them a list of everything that I buy, which is, you know, majority of everything. And then when you go to hit post, you make sure that you do not post in Marketplace. It'll have a little check mark. You uncheck that. But then you'll see all your other groups. And then you start saying, I'm going to post it in that one, that one, that one, that one. You can post in 21 groups at one time. So just with that click of the button, 21 groups with thousands of people have just seen my ad for In Search of Games. It worked.
No, that's good advice. I've always wondered too myself how you pull that off without getting flagged, because I've seen too many people say.
Another tip is if you know we were talking about doing the trade for games. If you put in a trade post for like the Switch in the Facebook Marketplace, you can do that and it will not get flagged because you technically have an item. So they only want people who have actual items in Marketplace. You can't sell a business or a service kind of thing. But I have this and I'm willing to trade that. That's allowed. So, and that will, that's, you know, why those do so well is because not only are you doing your groups, you're doing Marketplace as well.
That's definitely good to know. And I would say like towards hunting in the wild with yard sales, going to your Goodwill or your thrift shops, the stuff's still flowing out there. The only difference is you have a lot more competition. When I go out, like you got to have the get factor, you got to go after it and you need to be consistent. I hear a lot of new people complain about not finding anything. But then I, you know, if you ask about what they're doing, they're not doing it consistently. And it's just that one time they popped in, you know, once in a blue moon. You got to really go after it. If you're going to do it right.
Well, it is also discouraging too, to go to Goodwill's now and thrift stores now, and it's very hard to find one that's not going to price eBay, that's not going to take their Pokemon games and send them off to Goodwill auction for eBay kind of thing, you know? So it's they do slip by, but it's very far and few between now. So it's, like you said, if you got the gift factor and you're persistent, it'll happen. But it doesn't happen as often.
Do the trades, like you mentioned that you've got that Zelda Switch there, do the trades, do you see more movement on that or more like, hey, I pay cash? Or is it about a 50-50?
I get a lot of people that straight up say, hey, you know, and the title of this thing is all caps, trade only, looking for older video games, brand new Zelda Switch. But I'll instantly get, you know, people that says, hey, would you take this, you know, price-wise for it? I'm like, I just want to trade for it. This is actually the second one that I'm doing. The first one I had really good success with. I'm trying it again. It's something new for me. But the way I see it is, you know, sometimes my ads don't do so well a certain week, so I need something to alleviate that, you know, another backup kind of thing. And if you have that on the side, then yeah, you deal with a lot. I was telling Steve, you deal with a lot of BS, a lot of people who will want to trade you something stupid or something, you know, not even near the value of the thing. And you got to go above the value of it. And I'm very honest with people. They say, what are you looking for? And I say, well, I at least want to double the value of what I got. Makes it easier on you. You don't have to sell nothing and go out and buy a Switch. You could just trade up to me and here you go. And most people are cool with that. Some aren't. But it's something new for him. I'm still working out all the kinks with it.
I always wonder, like, what percentage are you looking for? I mean, like, when you're coming in and you have that, right, and you're looking for that value, are you trying to say, okay, this person has, you know, a Sega CD with five games, right? Are you looking for 50% value, or are you trying to what are you looking for as far as – because I always feel bad because I'm not going to go in there. Here's $20, right? Like, how do you assess that?
You're talking about like if someone was selling something, like, yeah. How do I? Okay, so this is another. It's a touchy subject with a lot of people, and you know, there's another thing you see with certain YouTubers. You know, they'll do this, and it's very bad practice. I'm very honest with people. You know, they may say, you know, are you a reseller, or you know, what are your plans with this? And you know, I see a Sega CD with five games. You know, one being like, you know, Sonic CD, you know, some good titles there. And they, you know, I want to cater to the person. You know, at the end of the day, what am I looking to do with it? You know, if I'm not going to keep it, I'm going to sell it. That's the goal. I can fully admit that. But I'm not out to hurt nobody. So if the person says, you know what, give me $50 and it's yours, I don't see a reason to haggle that. I'm already topping that. The Sega CD alone, you know, if it's like a Model 2 Sega CD, it's going to sell for $150 already, and you got five games. It's when you get into situations where he's like, you know what, give me $10 for everything. I don't know, would you take five? That's when it becomes really scummy, in my opinion. Now, there has been situations. I tell this story a lot. It's when I got my copy of Mega Man X3, and I went to a yard sale. It was a random off the road kind of freestyle yard sale. He had, you know, a couple little bootlegs out, and I was like, hey man, happen to have any, you know, games? I gave him the whole spiel, and he brought out some Super Nintendo games. I was like, sweet. I'm looking through them. You know, I was like, how much you want for them? He's like, I don't know, like $5 a piece. I was like, all right, I can do that. He had some decent stuff, you know, nothing crazy. And I was like, all right, so before I leave, you got anything else hot? And he's like, well, there's like five or six that I was thinking about keeping. And I was like, you know, if you bring them out, I can make you an offer. If you don't like it, then take it back inside. And he comes back out, and he had some titles that I can tell, you know, that's just, you know, cherishable to him. Then I saw it. It was Mega Man X3. It's a beautiful label. And I said, you know what, man? How much do you want for this game right here? He's like, I don't know. You know, could be worth a lot. Could be something rare. Something. I was like, you know what it is? And I was like, I'll tell you what. I'm going to do this for you. And I've done this before. And this is why I don't carry a lot of cash with me on yard sales. Or I run out. I say, man, I'll give you everything I got on me for this game. I don't have much, but you can have whatever I got in my wallet. I opened up and I showed it to him. He's like, you know what? Take it. $26. Was that fair? To me, it was. I gave him. He was happy with it. I showed him with it. I didn't haggle him at all. I gave him all that I had on me. Had I had more, he could have gotten it. It's a very touchy subject. It's a very... you got to have morals. I see people with them or without them. And I feel at the end of the day, I'm a good guy. I don't think any of us are innocent when it comes to, you know, if we walked up to a yard sale and saw a box with 5 sealed little Samsons in it, are we only going to take one? Because they're only charging $1 a piece. You know, we're going to take all of them. So, you know, we all got it in us.
That was one of my questions for you is how do you approach, like, when somebody's offering something that's dirt cheap price? Like, let's say you walk up to a yard sale. There's a $500 game. There's a little, or the $1,000 game. There's a little Samson sitting there. And they got $1 or $2 price tag on it. How do you approach that?
I assess the situation. I assess a lot of things, especially here in the South. You know, there can be some poor areas. You know, people will have yard sales for one of two reasons. They want to declutter their house or they need the money. And I can assess the situation pretty well as far as, do you need the money or are you just wanting to declutter? You know, I pulled up to a yard sale. This is right when the Wii U came out, maybe a month or two after it came out. This lady had a Wii U with a stack of Wii U games just thrown in a box. I was like, hey, ma'am, how much you want for this? She's like, ah, $10. I don't want that. I was like, okay, $10 it is. Now, had it been a yard sale, I go up to and I can see that these people need money. It may not be the best of homes. I can see that they're wanting anything that they can get for an item. You know, they'd say, hey, $10. I'd be like, you know what? How about 50? I'm still going to make, and I'm giving them more than they want. I'm not going to get, it would be asinine of me to go into this doing what I do. And I'm not trying to make as much as I can, but I'm also, you know, I'm not going to make it harder on myself in the long run. I'm not going to, if a game's worth 100, I'm not going to give them 80 and make $20 profit. To me, that, you know, if they're happy with, you know, $40 and I'm making 60, that's cool. The thing is, you got to make them happy. If they're happy, that's okay. If you're swindling them, then yeah, that's not cool. And I've seen it done. I've seen it a handful of times. The same situation. Here's a $100 game. Well, I don't know. Give me $5 for it. I don't know. Would you take $2? Why would you have it? What's the point? You're already on top.
Yeah. And for me, I've always kind of taken the approach, if it's way, way underpriced, like they don't know, there's two ways you can handle it. You can either offer more and be a good, you know, a good person about it. And I usually do that as long as the margins make sense. If it's something really expensive, especially, I've always had a habit of doing that. But then the other approach is, if you offer them too much, like let's say you're going to keep it in your collection, it's worth $500, you offer them $400 and they got it at $5. You're going to scare them off. Like, whoa, I should do some more with it. So you can kill a sale that way too. So there's kind of like a fine line between it. You want to try to be, in my opinion, you want to try to be good to people, but you also have to understand there's selling fees and everything else involved, especially if you're reselling or trading. And I try to get people the top dollar I can when I can. But if they're like $5 and I'm going to make $15 off it, I'm not so much worried about it. If it's $5 and I'm making $100, then I'm okay. I need to give this person some more money. So it's kind of one of those things.
The best way that works, Steve, is with the kids. I found out, like, I got a soft spot, you know, for the kids. Don't have them, but if they're at a yard sale and you know, they're selling their games or whatnot, and you 100% check with the parents. Hey, y'all cool? They want to sell these games. Because kids don't know no better. They'll say, you know, give me $1 a piece for these games. I always pay them more. Always. Because, you know, I'm not going to pay them, you know, crazy amounts. But, you know, they want, you know, $1 for Twilight Princess on the GameCube that was their older brother's. You know, I'm like, well, you know what? Here's $10. Go, you know, get yourself something.
Oh, yeah. If it's a kid selling it, I'm automatically, I have a soft spot for kids, you know, being a dad myself. So.
I'll never buy their lemonade, though. I ain't going to lie to you. I'm not a fan.
No, I ain't buying a lemonade. I don't know what went into that. Boogers and all.
You know, it's funny. And if I take my daughter to a garage sale, she always gets free stuff, man. Always. She comes back with, like, Pokemon cards and, like, and my son's like, what's going on? Why does she always get free stuff? I was like, man, you probably, if I would have done this when you were her age, you probably would have gotten the same thing.
I took my kiddo to a garage sale. It's been a while, but it came back with a Pikachu, an old vintage Pikachu stuffed animal. So free of charge. Same thing happens. Like, people love seeing the kids out there and they just, you know, sometimes they give them stuff.
Even at retro shows, my daughter, at least 2 or 3 booths give, they're just like, take it.
I had a pickup one time where was going after this Wii and it was GameCube compatible. It was an awesome lot worth like, I don't know, $600 or something. and it had a bunch of good GameCube titles, a bunch of good Wii stuff, stuff that moves quick, the Marios and all the other stuff that people want. And they had a price that, like, I don't know, $200, $250. It was still a great price, and there was plenty of margin to work with. They were mostly not the $5 titles. They were, you know, $30+ titles. I hit the lady up right away on Facebook Marketplace, and she got blown up by people after that. I mean, I ended up going through this after I got it, and there was Wavebirds, like multiples, all sorts of stuff. It ended up being a lot more than I originally thought it was going to be when I got home. But she was like, I got hit with like 40 messages, people trying to buy this. And I saw your Facebook picture with your kid, and I go, oh no, there's a kid involved. I can't back out now. So I got that because of that. But people have a soft spot for kids out there. And man, that ended up, the more I dug into that, like I just made sure the key things were there. I was like, wow, I felt a little bit bad when I got home. But I did pay at least a couple $100. So it's not like I gave him nothing for it or anything like that.
You should have put like an arm sling on your kid and took him there, you know, with like a crutch, you know, little Tiny Tim action, handing him the money, you know. Thank you, sir.
So this is another topic that I think a lot of people are curious about. Well, I got my mind on it, is when you go to a yard sale, you run into either people that priced it themselves or wherever you go, or what do you want to pay? Somebody asks you, what do you want to pay? What is the process you go through in your mind, Rubin? How do you come up with the number you want to pay?
I learned that, how to deal with that, through rejection from women and all sorts of things in all my life in high school and all this. The worst they're going to say is no. So, you know, if I see, you know, I know what I'm willing to pay and what I can pay. And, you know, if they say, well, what do you want to give me? You got to be careful. As you said, you can scare off somebody if you offer too much. You offer too little, they're going to be, you know, objective to even wanting to sell to you. Before any of that, when I, you know, the best advice I give to people at a yard sale is make the person, if you make a person smile before you even interact with them, they're most likely going to be, you know, in your favor to begin with. You know, you go up to somebody with, you know, a bunch of salt and just discomfort, they're already like not wanting to deal with you. So you go be jolly, be happy, make them laugh. You got to smile at them. Next thing you know, they're saying, you know what, how much you want to pay for this? I don't know, is $5 worth it to you? And they're either going to say no, or they're going to say yeah, or they're going to say leave. And for the most part, as you know, you go in there with honey, you're going to leave that with money, baby.
Do you have like a margin percentage you try to go for when you're buying stuff? Like, I know cheap, like when you buy cheap stuff, obviously the margin goes out the window because you don't get much back out of them. But, you know, reasonably priced games or stuff that has at least $20-$30 value, is there like a percentage at least you try to go for? Do you have any kind of strategy on that?
It's gotten to the point now where I used to be real heavy on, if I can list it, I will sell it. You know, it didn't matter if it was $6, $7. If I make a dollar profit at the end of the day, I was happy. It was a stupid way of doing about things. It pumped your listings up. But now, you know, with the change of the USPS shipping, now we got the you know, the ground advantage, you know, taking away first class, you can't really sell cheap things much anymore. So anything below $12.99, as far as like, that's what I would list it for. I don't list. I'll put a stack over here. I got so many common games over here just stacked up, which I can sell very easily. And for good prices in a different way. But when I'm out, like, my profit margin has to, I need to at least, you know, if I'm picking up a game that's going to sell for $20, I need to at least try to pay under 10 for it. I know some people can pay more. They have, you know, they don't mind smaller amounts. But for me, the way that I sell and how quick I sell, or the way it works, you know, I don't try to be as cheap as possible, but you know, I need to come up at least 50%.
Yeah, that makes sense. And if you, for those listening here, if you have a $20 game, let's say you're going to sell it on eBay, you're probably going to get hit with fees, which is going to be 50, you know, roughly 15%. Let's just keep it even number. That's $3. You're down to $17 coming back to you, and then on top of that, you usually have to cover shipping, usually free shipping included at that price on the cheaper games. So shipping's gotten a lot more expensive. You may be lucky, it might be a lighter game and be just under $4, or you may pay $5 to ship that game. So there's another $4 or $5 out of your pocket. So now you're down to $13, $14 coming back to you would you pay for it? If you pay $10, you only make it $3. That's 30% profit margin. And a lot of people don't realize, and the cheaper that game is below 20, the smaller your profit margin is. I used to have a rule a couple years ago that I didn't pay over $5 for anything around $10. That was my cutoff point, because there's a lot of $10 games. So if it's under $5 and above $10 value in that 10 to 20 range, boom, I would go for it. Now the shipping's got more expensive, and that would lead me to at least usually 50% profit. So I'm always shooting for at least 50% profit after you take everything out of there.
I do want to chime in with one thing, though. Shipping has gotten expensive for smaller items, but it's gotten cheaper for bigger items. As long as you're under that 70-pound mark, with the dimensions-wise, that ground advantage has saved me tremendously. Versus, you know, back in the day, I say it like it's a long time ago, but, you know, it could cost $20 to ship a console to Texas, and now with ground advantage, it cost me $8. So it has its benefits and its downside.
Personally, I do use Pirate Ship. I'm sure you've used it, Remean. For commercial shipping outside of eBay, I do sometimes go through eBay directly just because it's more convenient. But when it comes to big items, if you have a commercial discount, which they do have now through Pirate Ship on UPS, it used to be really cheap compared to others for heavy items. So now I'm curious. I haven't done anything super heavy on ground advantage. I should see how that compares with the current rates and that new service.
A good rule of thumb, the way I look at it, is think of your standard priority 12 by 12 by 8 and just picture that as a max of 70 pounds. And then anything that's going to be cheaper than priority, it's going to be cheaper. You know, of course, it's all about where it's going. But from what I found, sure, it's a pain. Anything that used to be first class is now a little bit more expensive. But when you're selling bigger items, like I still get shocked to this day. I'll be sitting here and I shipped a Sega CD not too long ago, you know, big long thing, you know, big box, awkward. Wow. It cost me $12. And the ground advantage is, you know, a 3 to 5 day, and it's treated well. It's not like a parcel select or like a media mail kind of thing. They're treated decently. And I'm here for the change. At first I was confused by it, but now I'm all like, yeah.
And anybody that's just getting started too, if you're shipping packages, do not go to USPS and ship your package there.
Oof.
The rate is somewhere between 30% and sometimes even up to 70% higher, depending on what you have weight dimension wise. The commercial rates are easily available to anyone. Just go to pirateship.com. You'll have instant access to commercial discounts. You print the label at home, stick it on, drop it off.
Even PayPal.
Yeah, you can get it from PayPal. If you're doing eBay, you can get them through eBay and vice versa, but it's substantially cheaper. It is not worth it. That $4 game may cost you $8 at UPS, and that'll just kill your profit margin. So definitely don't go there in person.
Same with supplies. Never get them at USPS.
Yeah. A little trick that I've learned, if you go to Staples, so sometimes during the day, I'm like, oh crap, I got to go drop this box off. You go to Staples, you drop your packages off, they give you a coupon, 30% off or $30, $10 off of 30 on shipping supplies. So I go in and get my bubble wrap or my packing peanuts. Sorry, I know people hate packing peanuts, but I use them for my 3D prints. But yeah, and you get $10 off of 30, and that's easily packing peanuts in a roll of bubble wrap. I've been doing that for about a year.
I actually get a lot of my shipping supplies for free, although it's technically not free at the end of the day. And I learned about this from ReadBean, where if you have a store,
eBay coupon, baby.
Yeah, you got a store subscription on eBay. Boom, they give you that free coupon. It pays for the subscription.
And I tell you what, you know, it comes in clutch recently because my coupon burned out and I ran out of tape. And I usually like the two things that I'll get are the, you know, my standard, 6x12 mailers or the tape. That's this fantastic deal. And I ran out of tape and I had to actually buy some from a store. And I was like, oh my God, this feels disgusting.
Yeah, tape's expensive.
But I tell you, that's why we started on the server. We started that section for, I wanted to be, you know, tips like where, you know, like, when it comes to bubble wrap, I order bubble wrap 700 foot at a time, then, you know, 3/8 perforated. And, you know, back, you know, a few years ago, you could get it for $20 ship. No BS about it. That's a lot of bubble wrap. And now the going rate's about $35, which I can understand. That's shipped. But on that section, you know, I'd want people to put tips, you know, like, you know, hey, if you go here, you can get this for this. Or, you know, a lot of people don't know if you go to USPS.com, you can get shipping supplies for free from them. Or, you know, scheduling pickups, you know, that's, you know, another reason, you know, you mentioned UPS earlier. UPS, unless you have routine scheduled pickups, they're not free. USPS is. So, you know, there's a lot of variables, man.
The pickup is great. At midnight, I'm like, oh, crap. All right, cool. Let me go do this and just throw them out in the morning.
I don't like to do that just because package thieves, depending on where you live, you may be more prevalent to that. You know, those that aren't worried about that, it is a convenient way to do it.
It depends. If you get in real good, and I have done this because there have been, you know, some pack, I'll be like, man, that's like $3,000 worth of packages going out. I get a little nervous. But if you get in good with your carrier, if they, you know, my carrier, I've lived here for 6 years now and I've never seen a different carrier. I could literally ask her and I'll say, hey, tomorrow, or I don't have to ask her directly. You know, you can leave a note in the, when you make your pickups, and I'll say in my front seat of the Jeep, and I'll just leave it unlocked, and she'll just go to my Jeep, unlock it, and pull the packages out. If you build that level up with these people, you know, so that I guess that's, you know, not for everybody. Depends on how you can talk to people.
One of the critical things with USPS is they have a date on the package label. They ask you to select the ship date. And I know in my region, they are super sticklers. They will return that package to you. So just, if you're making a label, make sure you pick the right date on it, because you may get it right back and waste your label.
I didn't know they could do that, or if they've ever tried. I don't know if I would ever allow that to happen. I paid for this label. Like a prime example would be, a week ago, my carrier went on vacation for 2 days. So for 2 days, my packages that were scheduled did not get picked up. That's not my fault that the other person doesn't know where I live, that they couldn't find this location. I had to go to the post office myself to learn this information, and they're scanning late packages. It's not my fault.
Yeah, if it gets a scan, you're good. I found the pickup people don't care so much, but if you drop it off at the actual post office, I've had more than once have a round of packages where I messed up and they sent them right back to me. And the reason they care about it, apparently in those contracts that they have with eBay and the big shipping companies, there is a rule in there that within a certain amount of days, the package must be scanned. Otherwise, it will not pay them for the label, and eBay and all those companies don't. It's in their commercial contract. So that's why they're doing it, so that they don't get penalized for you dropping it off late.
Well, you're also getting you know, penalized yourself on eBay. Like if I sold a game today and I offered 2 day handling time, I print the label 3 days from now. It's already late. No, I print the label now, but I didn't take it to the post office for 3 days. It doesn't get uploaded to eBay, or it doesn't get its status changed on eBay. I'm still going to get penalized for that. And that's my fault. Or if they didn't scan at all, it's going to be the same way. So it's going to hurt everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Moving on a little bit here. What are some of the things you think separate those that are successful at retro game collecting and those that are not successful?
To be able to look at someone who picked up a lot and, you know, they say, man, I just picked up this crazy lot for $150, and learn how to be like, man, that's awesome. Good for you. Instead of being like, man, I hate this guy. Like, there ain't no way, that's fake. You're lying, all this. I've seen the craziest lots in my time of people paying $50 for, you know, just obscene things. And you learn to be like, that's real. That happens. So you get this mindset that, you know what, if he can do it, I can do it. And then you start grinding. You start being persistent. I mean, I want to get a good lot like that. I see it all the time in comments where people saying like, oh, lots like that don't exist. Game collecting's dead. You can't do it. I still get crazy lots. Like, I mean, are you kidding me?
Dude, that Saturn lot, I'm still, speaking of being jealous, man, I'm glad I got a piece of that, but.
The most Saturns I've gotten ever in a 2 month time, I come across like 6 Saturn consoles.
Yeah, that was crazy. I'm glad to have that Mega Man, by the way.
I'm glad it went to someone who could use it. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I get like, I'm with you 100%. You're just like, it can go two ways. It either motivates you or some days can discourage you. But at the end of the day, you're just like, oh man, if my take is like, if this person can do it, yeah, I just got to do a little push a little bit more and I can try to get it. But
I used to hate a lot of people, a lot of competition at flea markets. I, you know, we would be enemies. And then I became friends with them. And next thing you know, they'd be like, hey, man, I just passed up a yard sale. There's some stuff up there I didn't want if you want. I'd be like, that's cool. You know, like.
Yeah, I run across people like they're. I'm part of a retro gamers group in my city, and I'm literally walking up to a garage sale and I'm looking at this guy. I'm like, what the heck are you doing here? You're like 80 miles this way. What are you doing on my turf? So it's a fun little competition too. So because you could be a jerk, right? Or you end up making friends. And I think that's the fun part about it. It's just kind of the like-minded people coming together.
Yeah, it's kind of funny too. Like you talked about running into people and figuring out who people are and all that. Cookies from the server. He lives kind of in the region I'm in, and I befriended this old guy that is basically like the yard sale aficionado, and he goes out to these things before they even open all the time. And so he's just out there scavenging all of his territory for video games all the time.
Cookies run?
No, this guy does. And he calls me to sell them to me at reseller prices. And he's just happy because I'm happy. And we've grown a friendship over the years. But I'm always like, man, I bet Cookies wish he grabbed this at the yard sale. He brought 200 Sega Genesis games to me one time, this guy did. And man, just making friends with people out there. You'd be amazed how many people, if they know you're collecting, or even if they're into reselling, they don't mind selling these stuff as long as they make a buck or two off of it.
Yeah, their market might not be video games, you know? You know, I know a lot of resellers here, you know, like somebody that he specifically buys scrubs or clothing. And I used to sell scrubs and whatnot. And, you know, if I found a yard sale, I'd be like, hey, man, they got a whole bunch of like Grey's Anatomy scrubs over here, 50 cents a pop. And he'll be like, hell yeah. And next thing you know, I might get a call from him that says, hey, there's some, you know, some old Nintendo games over here, you know?
Yeah, it does. And you really got to have that get factor. You know, there's a lot of people that complain about not finding anything, and they just don't go out there and spend the time. And let me tell you, when you hit that big lot or you get that exciting find that you've been looking for, the energy and the excitement from it will drive you to keep on going, you know, and you'll be like, man. It just
takes that one hit.
That's all. One can make all the difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, if you haven't hit and you're trying out there, don't get discouraged.
Don't give up.
Yeah, because we've all had those big hits, and it just takes some time sometimes. And, you know, just kind of talking about it a little bit too, I know you pick up more than just video games, and that's one thing that people definitely don't want to overlook. If you're out there hunting, you shouldn't just hunt for video games. You can sell and resell other stuff too and turn it into video games or trade it. There's lots of other things people are looking for that resell well. And I know you're kind of a little bit of the king of that. You don't put it always on camera, some of these other things you do, but what are some of the things you would recommend people look for at yard sales or thrift stores or wherever they're at, even Facebook Marketplace, that are good sellers or things that may not be obvious to buy?
When it comes to like it, unless you're in the know of something, I used to think of it as like you're paying for your education. So if you don't know if that's something that's worth it, well, you know, you spent $5 on it. Whether it is or not, you paid to learn that. A lot of things that I'd look for, I'm really my selling ways have changed. I'm trying to go smaller. Like, I don't like selling big stuff. There is nothing more annoying than having to pack up something that's 40 pounds, takes all my bubble wrap, and I'm only making $30 kind of thing. I can't. It takes up too much real estate. I like to find stuff small. I used to be real big into clothes, but not just really clothes. I used to sell a lot of scrubs. Scrubs are one of those things that you can always find cheap at a yard sale, and they're styled. And, you know, you have CNAs and nurses out there that have the freedom to wear, you know, scrubs that might have Winnie the Pooh on them or something. And when you buy scrubs brand new, they can be very expensive, especially for certain brands. You know, like I mentioned Grey's Anatomy earlier. It's just one of those items that people will accumulate a bunch of and sell cheap that you can pick up. But the problem is with clothing. So I see the mannequins back there. I can, you know, make $15 profit selling a pair of, you know, a set of scrubs, but it's going to take me like 20 minutes to do that listing. You know, like I try to get something that I can list quick, and that I can move quick. You know, here lately, or not lately, but for the past, you know, 3 or 4 years, I've really been, when I'm out, I always look for, you know, things like beer taps. Beer taps always do well for me being in a brewery town that I'm in. There's a lot of collectors out there that, you know, a lot of people with, you know, bars that they want specific beer taps for, you know, taps that don't, you know, they can't get there. Tools are a great thing. You know, if you see a toolbox at a yard sale, and you'll see, I see it a lot here, you know, being in these southern states, you'll just have a guy with, like, you know, a Snap-on box or something, and he'll just say, dig in there and just find something you need. I'm looking for specific brands. You know, if I find a Snap-on wrench, you'd be surprised at what you can get for it, especially if it's older, and he may want a dollar for it. And that's, you know, I could ship that all day. It's going to take a few seconds, and it can be beat all to hell. It don't matter. That's what it's supposed to be. And, you know, I've sold stuff like $30, $40 a pop for just a simple wrench, you know, sockets, all sorts of stuff. But you pay for your education, you know, like you, if you see something that's interesting, if it's interesting to you, it might be interesting to somebody else. It's small. It's cool looking. Have you ever sold it before? No. So that means you probably shouldn't pay a lot for it. They only want a buck for it. Why not? You try it, list it. If it sells, then, you know, to look out for something like that. I've experimented with a lot of things. The problem with that is, and until you get good at it, you're going to end up with a lot of stale inventory. And that's when, you know, it's, you're like, ah, I don't want, why do I even have that kind of thing? As I'm looking over here at like a whole wall of stale inventory.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've got to do some purging myself in the garage. So you're right. I like the learning experience is nice. I've done that a couple times. Yeah, just, you can't let it discourage you. Like you said, you just take that as like, that's a $5 lesson learned.
Sure.
And you move on. Yeah. I like that. I like that term.
I think some of the other ones, so if you do look at clothing while you're out there, vintage video game clothing does sell for quite a lot of money if you find it. That's one thing to look for. Magazines, like you may find old Nintendo Powers, they sell decently online. There's usually a lot of them on eBay, but if they're in good condition or if you want them for yourself, that's one thing. Toys, vintage toys, there's a lot of them. Think about what was popular when you were a kid. There's probably somebody else that wants to buy it, you know, whether it's Ninja Turtles, but look for what year they were made. Like modern stuff, I wouldn't focus as much on, but stuff like in the 90s, like that kind of stuff has a resale market for it. And you'll find these things. I mean, if they have old video games, they probably have old toys and whatnot.
Vinyl records, for sure.
And I found anime, too. Anime stuff is a pretty safe gamble if the price is cheap. Every now and again, it's, you know, not worth that much. But especially, like, older anime stuff, there it wasn't as popular in the U.S. back then, and they can resell quite a bit. Even some of the newer anime stuff. And if you have the eBay app, it's got a barcode scanner. Just pop it open, scan the barcode, boom, you'll at least see some listings and give you a quick idea if you're out there. Yeah, I don't like to do that in front of people, like if it's at a yard sale, but if I'm just perusing around, you know, casually looking at stuff, I'll hit it with my phone and that'll give me some knowledge so I'm not gambling my money all the time. And every now and again, I find a gem, you know, even little things like pocket recorders, like the little voice recorders that had the little tiny tapes on them. Those things sell for a lot of money. Like if you're interviewing somebody on a little tape recorder, you know, sealed media, old sealed media that's out sometimes sells good, depending
like
on what
VHS cassettes, you know. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, the you know, like gaming shirts and whatnot. One of the biggest things, and I still do this to this day, Goodwill's, at least my Goodwill's around here, every Goodwill's different because it's not technically, they're all kind of owned individually in a sense, so they can all be different, varied in price kind of thing. But they'll have $1.49 t-shirts. And they'll have a whole rack of $1.49 t-shirts. And I will go through each individual shirt. Yeah, I'm looking for gaming shirts. Sure, I'll pick those up every now and then. But the biggest thing to look out for is band shirts. Band shirts or tour shirts. You know, if you have a concert shirt. If I find, you know, an 88 Metallica concert worn t-shirt, that's $150 right there, easy. And, you know, that's one thing people donate and that they – make it to that rack, you would be very surprised.
Yeah, specialty stuff is always interesting. I can tell you from the, I've got into the vintage video game clothing a little bit, and there are jackets that sell for thousands of dollars, Nintendo related mm-hmm. jackets. There are t-shirts that I would say like Nintendo, like NES, Super Nintendo era stuff, Sega Genesis era stuff. You could get at least $50 for that most of the time, as long as it's something, you know, people are semi-interested in. If it's a popular person like Sonic or Mario or Donkey Kong, it's usually at least $100 or close to it on those things. So they're definitely worth it. If you see them, I would pick it up. Those are pretty safe gambles. Just make sure it's the older ones. Anything modern, like 5-10 years, not as much, you know, there'll be exceptions to everything, but they sell more towards normal t-shirt prices.
And another tip, just say, I don't know why I don't want to touch on it. because a lot of people ask me, you know, like, you know, why not just pick up the whole box of vinyl records? Well, you can if it's cheap. What makes a vinyl record, you know, worth something, and a lot of people don't realize this, and they understand it when you tell them, is a lot of metal, like heavy metal, or in that time frame, metal does extremely well. Like a Pantera vinyl or something like a Tool vinyl sells extremely well, and it's extremely valuable simply for the fact that the transition from vinyl to cassette. So there wasn't that many vinyls made for the most part, or you had vinyl heads that want the original, you know, they want that original disc of vinyl. So if you see a box of vinyl records and you see metal, sure, they can be reproductions, which there are a lot of reproductions now. But if you find them and you know how to authenticate them yourself, kind of like you're doing like a Pokemon card, they are, I mean, most expensive record I saw, I think, was $400. And it'd just be some no-name punk band or something, you know? But, you know, you'll see stuff, you know, like your Elton John or, you know, like popular stuff like that. They're not going to be worth anything. Sure, some things, you know, like Pink Floyd, older albums, they were some money. But there's a lot of filler. Good stuff, but it's, in my eyes, it's not worth it. You got to know what to look for when it comes to vinyl.
And you could, if they have a UPC on them, you can scan them on the eBay app.
The better ones don't have UPCs.
Ah, okay. All right, well, there's a tip. Don't look for the UPC.
I go to half-price books sometimes, and I'll look in ours, they have like this wooden cover with a plexiglass top that you just get enough to put your fingers through to look at the vinyl. And so that's kind of what I've looked like. Okay, well, if this stuff's in here, then it's definitely more than the $12 set that they have just out. Kind of using them as a guide, I guess, because I know nothing about vinyl, but I've come across more and more.
It's one of those things you can get really cheap, but it's also one of those things that, like, you got to educate yourself a bit on it to sell it, because it's like selling Pokemon cards, which, you know, I know nothing about. I'm not a card buyer or seller. But, you know, to a collector or someone who wants it, something you may overlook could be a problem for them. So, you know, there's a lot of specific things when it comes to vinyl records that you got to look out for.
Yeah, card collecting is the same way, too. Like, old Pokemon cards and old Magic the Gathering are pretty safe, but they need to be their early years. So do a little research and figure out, hey, what were the years the first sets are? And they have copyrights on, I think, a lot of the cards. So, or figure out how to identify that. That's an easy one to figure out. And if you come across it, you'll know, you know.
And learn how to condition it, too, or like how to accurately describe the condition. Because, you know, like, you know, I sold you a sealed copy of a game at one point. To me, it looked great, but you noticed that there was, you know, some issues. I overlooked it because I don't deal in sealed games, you know, kind of thing. That's not my forte. But when it comes to vinyl records, I've done it enough now to be like, well, this is a problem here. And, you know, to the average person, they would just say, yeah, that's fine. That's not a big deal. Same with cards, you know, just a littlest bend on the edge or something could be a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Condition is everything in collectibles, right? So if you're taking a gamble, make sure you're taking condition into account. So moving into the selling side of things a little bit, what are your favorite platforms for selling, Reembean?
Honestly, here lately, you know, I've been doing a lot of quick flips with Weevil or people like that, to where, you know, you have these Amazon sellers and they'll have buy list, and, you know, I come with a lot of that stuff that they have or that they buy, I find all the time. And what they don't buy, you know, I'll list on my dedicated platforms. That's been fun for me. Of course, there's eBay. You know, I'm actually dealing with a brand new eBay store that I started up a while back. Interestingly enough, is my older eBay store. This is one, you know, 3,000-4,000 feedback kind of thing. It was a very big store. The store that I got now is doing just as well, and not near as long as that one's been, but. Getting back into eBay, which is always fun. It's easy. People don't realize how easy it is to sell on eBay. It's not complicated. I mean, it's literally designed, you know, with you in mind, as far as they want you to sell, because they want to make their part of it. So they're going to make it as easy as possible. It's up to you to do your research and to do it. But I can see here, I can list a game in 30 seconds. I mean, it ain't going to take long at all. You know, eBay's fun, especially now that they've offered immediate payouts. You know, kind of feels like the old days of, you know, getting paid directly to PayPal. I don't like Mercari much anymore. Mercari's just doesn't have enough audience for me. And I used to sell on Amazon back in the day. I dabbled in FBA, but I don't know. It just wasn't for me. I was just always an eBay kind of guy. And then so I got my eBay and I got my dedicated buy list.
What's your thoughts on Whatnot?
A lot of people have asked me. I've actually had the people of Whatnot reach out to me on Instagram because people recommended me. And they say, hey, man, you want to, you know, come sell on Whatnot. And I think it's awesome if you have an audience. I would do a hell of a lot better than the average person. And that doesn't seem fair.
No, 100%. Like John Riggs, man, his shows just get a ton of stuff. And I'm sitting here and I do Whatnot, and I probably do one or two shows a month. And man, it's crazy just seeing, just with a little bit of notoriety, like those guys. And they're trying to get people to join their platform. So they kind of give them the kitchen sink a little bit, you know.
I've never personally seen a Whatnot show. I know all about it and what it is. I've never personally seen one, but the things that I hear is, you know, like if you watch this person's Whatnot because you follow them on social media or whatever it may be, you may pay up for something. Next thing you know, you're paying more than what it goes for. I hear about that sometimes just simply because it's coming from this person, and it's not, I don't know how they would fix it, but if they can make it a way to where the average person who doesn't have a following can join up on Whatnot and have just as much success as, you know, someone who's now, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I took the time to build up my audience, and, you know, what's stopping me from getting on there and doing it? You know, there's nothing stopping you from building an audience.
Yeah.
But it's not for me. I don't like the format. Just seems like I could get confused, or I can mess something up. And
it depends on your personality. I fly off the seat of my pants, so that's perfect for me. And the fact that, like, within 30 seconds, I've got an item sold. I don't have to, like, check every day, like, oh, it's this eBay. I got 5 watchers. So to me and my personality, it's great. But I get it. Like, and that's why I kind of was asking you about how you do your videos. I think it all kind of ties together. Like, if you get your video, then you edit it and you're good to go, versus I just go, like, you know, I said it, you'll hear it on one of our podcast episodes. I'm like a dog, you know, I'm living the moment, you know.
Sure.
So it's perfect format for me, but other people I could see, like you said, get really confused, and because it's hard, because you've got people asking you all these questions, especially you fire up, guarantee you have 50 people in there. Hey, let me see your PS2, let me see your PS1, and you just too much happening.
I hear it's a great place to sell lower end stuff. Like if you have a hard time moving, you know, games that are $5 or $10, it's a great place where you may not get $5 or $10, but you know that they will sell. You know, for me, like I told y'all earlier, you know, I have all this filler games over here, games that are worth $5 to $12, stacks of them, stacks of 360, we and all that. It is so easy to sell them, and people don't realize that it's very easy, and it's. I will make a stack of or take a picture of the whole wall, and $5 each, free ship for 5 or more. And you would be surprised how many collectors who are trying to fill out their 360 collection or their Wii collection that will buy this at $5. I've done one transaction for like $700-$800 for just Wii games, filler, common crap, you know, and it works. You got to go to these Facebook groups, go to a Wii collector group. Post all your Wii games, they go nuts.
You don't happen to have that for Game Gear, do you?
Have that for what?
Game Gear.
I don't know.
We were talking about that. It's pretty.
Rom's going for the full set.
Ooh. Oh yeah, you got the full set, don't you, Steve?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I've been hitting them up, getting some tips. But you know, it's crazy. Like this 90 that I have, that was easy. But now it's really starting to get into the like the. Just the not rare, but just harder to find stuff. So,
game, you don't see a lot of. I used to be able to go, you know, one trip yard selling. I'm coming back with at least one Game Gear. You know, I used to see them all the time. I rarely see Game Gear as much anymore, like at least in the wild.
They're all thrown out from breaking.
Yeah, and none of them work.
Yeah, no sound. All right, just trash it. Mm-hmm.
So, touching back on eBay, I think by far is the most popular platform. Mercari was starting to gain way for a little bit, and then they started jacking the fees up, and the shipping got expensive on the low end. So, people kind of like abandoned that platform to a certain extent from a seller standpoint, and I don't think there's as many eyes as there used to be on it. And I get what they're trying to do, but, you know, you got rid of your advantage, and why go to you as opposed to eBay? So with eBay, you've had a long history. I've had a long history with eBay. I've sold thousands of items on there myself. I've got quite a lot of feedback too. What are some tips you'd kind of give to our audience? Like what kind of things can you do to improve your chances on, like, algorithms is a big thing. They keep that a little hush hush, like things you've noticed over the years that help, things that help get your items sold. And then also like dealing with the other side of it, order issues, customers that are kind of a pain. Cause I know a lot of people worry about that. Just what are some general tips you have for everybody?
Go to the dollar store and go to the dollar store and go to their poster board and pick up 5 sheets of white poster board. You're only going to need one, but you want backups because they get dirty quick. Get you a counter and take that poster board and just curve it up the wall. So now it's this nice curve. Now you have this beautiful white backdrop to take pictures on. 100% game changer versus just taking a picture randomly on a counter. I'm out of poster board, but I got a white backdrop. It kind of works until I get more. But you'll have no line. It'll look perfect. It'll look like you're taking a picture inside of a photo cube. Only cost you a dollar. Good pictures. It has to be. You have to put in the effort to sell something. Minimum 4 pictures. Decent pictures, not blurry. Put a description in. I know they got that AI thing now, but put a description in because the AI comes off way too romantic, in my opinion. Like, you are really
you're really trying to sell it.
Oh man, I tried doing that on Etsy and I'm just like, no, this sounds stupid.
Yeah, no one wants to hear that. You know, I'll say, you know what, this test isn't working, it has some wear here, crack cases pictured, this looks like this, there you go.
That's funny you mentioned that, because I did one of those recently and it was like, this will be the ultimate item for your video game collection, any collector should own this. It was like a full paragraph of bull crap, and sometimes it puts in stuff that you don't want in there that could get you in trouble.
Oh yeah, like your dead grandma will come back to life with the purchase of this Madden 99. Yeah, they put in some wacky stuff, and I just don't trust it, because I don't, you know, I read through most of it, but the buyer might read something and take it and be like, you know what, it was supposed to be this great, awesome thing, but it's in Madden 99. He said it was excellent. Your AI lied to me, you know, so I don't do that. Another thing, too, is consistency. Everybody says list 10 items a day, and then, you know, you'll get to a point where you're selling at least 10 items a day. I believe that, and I don't. There's going to be times in your life where you can't list 10 items a day, or you may miss a day. But list, always have. What I do is I stick to the 10 listings a day, but before the day is over, the hardest thing for people is finding another 10 items to list. So before I get out of the office, I make sure I have items that I'm going to list here, or some days it may be 20 listings or 30 listings. As long as you're just consistent with it to the point where you're at least showing eBay that, hey, I'm putting in the effort. Another helpful tip is, if you send offers, eBay is looking at you like, hey, you're trying to sell something. Allow counter offers. I never allow counter offers on just normal listings, but when I send an offer, I allow a counter offer. If they send me a counter offer and I don't like it, I'm not going to decline it. I'm going to leave it hanging. eBay doesn't want to see you kill a sale, but they want to see you trying. So now you got this hanging sale. That's going to look good on you, even though they're not going to get it. There's been many a times of that happening, and the next thing you know, someone else bought it. So that's another little tip. Do not be scared of international shipping. I've been, you know, hurt more times by people in my own country than I have, you know, selling to someone in Bangladesh for, you know, who all knows. Another thing, too, and this is a very big deal. Offer free returns. Offer 2-day shipping. Now, I would say that's if you're aspiring to be a top-rated seller, which does help to a degree, but the free returns is a big deal. Number one, a lot of people think when you turn that on, you're just going to get hit with nothing but returns. I get just as many returns as if it was not on. The biggest difference is, let's say I sell a sealed copy of, you know, Mario 64 for the, you know, Nintendo 64, and it's beautiful. I ship it out to them, and you know, they open it for whatever reason. I don't know why they would, and they don't like it. They send it back to me. So now I got this open copy of Mario Kart 64. I can't sell it for the price I sold it at, but what I can do, since I offered free returns, is I can deduct price. I can deduct up to 50% of what I sold it to him for. So I say I sold it to him for $500. He's only getting a $250 refund. And then if they want to leave negative feedback, which they might because you're deducting, because that is your right, eBay will automatically remove that because you offered free returns. That is a big deal. And it has saved me many a time.
Yeah, they also have pretty good rules around the international shipping if you use their international shipping program. So to be clear, mm-hmm. it's that box you got to check. And if something gets damaged internationally, which is one thing people worry about, or something goes awry internationally, you are only responsible until it gets to eBay shipping facility in the US where they package it. They take care of the international side of it. The negative feedbacks, the loss of money, eBay covers it for you. I mean, it's a win-win Absolutely. Situation. I've had a feedback removed because it got damaged in shipping and I packaged it well and they took it right off. No questions asked. So, you know, definitely don't be afraid there. And the other thing I think is really important where a lot of sellers miss, and you mentioned about the white backdrop. I do a black backdrop. It's a little different contrast.
Oh, I've seen people do it. It looks good too.
Yeah, it looks sharp. And, you know, I'm not saying there's anything better psychologically or whatever, but the one thing I always do is I include everything in the picture. So if I'm selling a CIB game, it's going to show that case. It's going to show that manual. It's going to show that disc all in the picture. It's not going to be the outside of the box. I want the seller to go, okay, that's what I want right there. Because how many times I've been through eBay trying to price comp it? It doesn't tell you in the title. You know, make sure you always list in the title what it is. Like if it's complete, say it's complete. If it includes the case, disc, manual, I put that in the title. And then the picture shows clearly what it is. That alone will draw a lot of people to your listings and help your items sell quickly. I've never had a problem with sell-through rates ever doing that method. And I go through all the time and I'm clicking. All right, this one's missing the manual. This one's missing the manual. Drives me nuts when listing. That takes me more time than anything trying to find who I got to undercut. You know, so don't be that seller.
Here's a question for you, Steve. How do you price your items? That's a question for a lot of people.
Yeah. So when it comes to pricing, I have a formula I follow. First of all, I want to be the cheapest priced that is comparable condition. I always take condition into consideration. If I'm listing very good and I'm very strict about categories, very good for me means it's in really good shape. I never use like new because people assume it's new at that point. If there's any flaw in it, you get these buyers that go and want to return it on you. I've dealt with that before. Mm-hmm. But I look for that condition and I visually look at it too. Just because somebody listed one is very good, there'll be one with ripped up labels and all that. No, I'm physically looking until I find the one that I think is really a competitor. If something is not currently listed in equivalent condition and I look at the recent solds and I see what it sold for and I go above that number, I always ante up if it's not available in that condition or if I have something special, like if it's a really crisp Super Nintendo game that looks like new where somebody's going to potentially grade that, I'm going to put it at a ridiculously high price and I'm going to put offers on there. I do a little bit of reconnaissance on what's graded copies selling for, but condition is important. You can't just list things and undercut people. You need to take your condition. You're underselling yourself if you don't. And don't be afraid to up the ante if there's nothing listed at the moment.
Sure, absolutely. The reason I asked that is some people are real bent on they want the maximum amount that they feel that they deserve or can get. So, and I'm with you on that. I typically, for the most part, I will try to be the cheapest currently listed, you know, out there that you can get. When you rely on sold comps, you rely on, I can't take auctions into account. I never do. An auction's entirely different. An auction has the benefit of going one of two ways. It's going to go for higher. It's going to go for lower. A lot of times it's going to go for lower. That's why, you know, video game price charting, it's a great tool to have, but it's not a reliable tool to have because they have auctions factored into it. So when you look at only buy it now listings, you're looking at listings that are available, not listings that you have to be a part of actively. So a buy it now listing is going to be what you want to look at. But recently, today I sold a PS1 transparent blue controller. Very good condition. There was some that were listed that they considered very good condition for $25. I sold it for $30 free ship, but mine was mint. And I was like, this is $5 more than the currently listed, but mine is beautiful. Yours isn't. It's sold. So, you know, you do got to take that the condition into account. But another thing, too, is like, are you really scared to lose a dollar kind of thing? I ain't going to say I'm known for it, but if I'm selling on Discord, I'm never near eBay prices. I'm always selling something cheap. If you bought something from me, you've gotten it well under pricing. I'm not scared to lose $5 here and there. If I'm selling something that's $100, what am I worried about losing $5 for? You know, I guess it's different for everybody. Sometimes on eBay, I'll just purposely price something cheap because I want it going quick, you know, and some people they'll be like, man, I had this game listed for a month now and it's just not moving because you got it listed with 500 other copies that are all the same price. Knock a dollar or two off of it. And there you go.
Yeah, I think one of the parts that people get confused with too is they hear eBay and they start with auctions. Almost all my listings are buy it now, best offer. And some people turn off the best offer. You know, that's a personal choice there. But if you go auction only, a lot of stuff undersells because
big time.
You have to have somebody there live in the moment bidding on it or putting in a bid before that and competing. If you go buy it now, you tend to get more overall on price. Auctions for me are only for things I want to get rid of. You talked about how you sell $5 a piece plus shipping on cheap games. For me, I will bundle them up when there's stuff that my margin is going to be like a buck if I sell it individually. And that's what I'll get after all the fees and shipping. I'll bundle them up. I'll put them on eBay. I'll let them roll on a 7-day auction. Shipping included is added on top of the price. I usually pick like one of the flat rates or something that fits into because it keeps it pretty economical. And then whatever it goes for, it goes for. I get $2-3 a piece net back to me usually. Which is double what I would have got if I tried to sell them individually and they're gone. So there is a time and place for auctions, but just be aware if it undershoots, you know, you gotta own that. That's a contract to sell when you do sell auctions.
And that has bit me. And it's kind of where I came up with my idea of how I sell the games now is at one point I had accumulated like well over 100 PS1 games that were just filler games, you know, $10, $12 games. Or $5, $12 games that I didn't want to list individually. I want to say it was like 120 games total. And I was like, you know what? Let's just do an auction. All they got to do is I'm going to put in the cost of shipping. I'm going to start it at 99 cents. Let it ride. I sold all 120 games for $90. They won. They got a great lot. And then I was like, you know what? Let's try something. So I would, you know, I had a whole bunch of original Xbox games. Went to a Facebook group, $5 each, free shipping, five, you know, if you get five or more, someone buys 100 games at $5. I just made $500 versus that 90. Now, sure, the auction could have went a different way, but not for that type of stuff. I'd never had good luck doing it.
Yeah, if you're doing in bulk, expect it to be a reseller and they're not going to pay more than $2 or so a piece. That's what's going to happen. It's a way to get it gone and that's what you should expect, you know, something like that. When it comes to that strategy is great. Actually, I may even try that at some point here. But, you know, it's all about your priorities. What are you trying to do? Get rid of it, trying to list it, you know. You got the field messages too. Sure. So
people are shocked that we can go.
Well, I think that pretty well covers the topic for today. Thanks everybody for tuning in with us. And I appreciate you, Reenby, for hopping on and joining us. It's always great to talk to you.
I appreciate y'all letting me come on here. It was fun to ramble on and look at y'all's pretty faces and talk about, you know, the hobbies that we're in.
Yeah, he's lying a little bit there about pretty faces.
Yeah, no, it's Yeah, this has been fun. It's good getting insight and just kind of picking people's brains because you guys are definitely have a lot more experience under your belt. So the whole lot that I've stayed away from the lower end lots, but talking to y'all now, kind of like I haven't even thought about doing something like that. So good info. I'm sure a lot of people out there are going to pick it up and hopefully become a lot more knowledgeable too.
Yeah, absolutely.